Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my name's Nick.
Hello, I'm Woogie.
We are the Mouth of Manliness. This is a podcast all about mental health. But it's not just mental health. It's kind of about people's lives and about how they cope and how they manage in the world.
Yeah, and digging into the stories that make them who they are.
Yeah, so it's real life stories where we talk about things that people have been through and how they've managed and how they've coped and how they've come out the other side. So sometimes it's just me and Woggy here, but more often than not, we're talking to guests, sometimes more well-known guests, but more often than anything, it's just normal people who have been through interesting situations.
Yeah, and they've all got a lovely story to tell.
Yeah, so Mouth of Manliness, we are about mental health, but we're more about people and stories.
So, welcome to the Mouth.
The Mouth of Manliness. Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. Welcome back. It is autumn here in kind of darkest Essex.
It is. It's dreary. It's raining. Our sunshine has gone and we are now buying jumpers. So, yes. Welcome back, listeners.
I quite like that, though. I quite like it. Well, today we have got Tess Brigham. And Tess, you're not from the UK, are you?
No, I'm not. But I am a big, big fan of British television. I have the app, the Acorn TV. So I watch a lot of British mysteries.
Oh, like murder mysteries.
Yes, yes. And my son is, he's fascinated by the culture. He loves to have, what's your breakfast? He wanted us to figure out how to get blood sausage at one point. But we had to go to the special section to get the special English beans. He was having this breakfast for a while of eggs, beans.
Nice.
He wanted all of that. We did the best we could out here in California.
Yeah, black pudding is a good thing.
quite a taste.
Very irony, given the blood.
I'm still not convinced if I like it or not.
Yeah, sometimes it's, yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Yeah. Well, it's lovely to have an Anglophile on with us. Then.
Yes, my limited resources.
This is a beautiful thing. No, it is good. Everybody likes a good English breakfast.
Yes. So tell us about what it is you do, what you do then, Tess.
Sure. So I am a licensed psychotherapist and I'm also a board certified coach. So, and I specialize in working with young adults. I've been working with people for over 15 years and about 10 years ago, I opened a therapy practice in downtown San Francisco. So I'm in California in the San Francisco Bay. And, I didn't know who to expect, but all of a sudden, all of these young adults started showing up, 23, 24, 25. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember my 20s. They were hard. Yeah. And it was confusing. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I was really lost. But what struck me was that the world was so radically different, you know, being a 20 something in, you know, 2012, 2015, whatever it was very different than being a 20 something when, you know, in the 90s, which is, yeah. I'm aging myself here, but you know, I didn't have, there wasn't social media. There weren't phones. We weren't attached to There wasn't, you know, there was internet, but no one was really, it wasn't this thing. It was like, you know, you had to dial up. Yeah. So what occurred to me was, it was like, oh, wow, you know, there's all these young people out there going through these really difficult, stressful things, trying to figure out who they are, what they want, what life's all about, you know, what do I want to do with my life? And while simultaneously dealing with a world that was so radically different than, you know, older people could really even understand. And that got me really interested in, at the time they were millennials. Now millennials are older, you know, they're Gen Zers. But at the time I was just, I really stopped and started to learn and research and study these younger generations to try to understand, you know, what makes them different and what is it that they need in order to be successful in your 20s? Because it's not, you know, it's not, it doesn't have to be miserable. It is a difficult time. It is a time of a lot of exploration, but I'm a firm believer that if you can figure some things out, if you can figure out how to have a good sense of self, you know, set boundaries, know what a good relationship looks like, you know, figure out how to get on a good career path that works for you. If you can figure some of these things out for yourself, you know, it makes your 30s, 40s, 50s, it makes all of that so much easier, better. It makes you happier. All of that. So that's really what I do, is I just help young adults try to find themselves.
Yeah.
That's interesting. A sense of self is something that I tend to come back to all the time. But what were some of the differences then that you've kind of come, you know, you've discovered in your work between, say, like, you know, people growing up in the early 90s, like me and, well, me.
Well, I mean, I think that the biggest part of it is just, you know, technology and information and expectations, right? Like when I was in my 20s, I didn't have, there wasn't Instagram, so I wasn't comparing myself to anyone. Yeah. You would compare yourself to people on magazines, maybe on TV, but it wasn't, you know, these things weren't with you 24/7.
Yeah.
And I didn't have access to it. And basically in my 20s, you know, you would just look around and go, oh yeah, we're all broke and poor. You know, we're all broke. None of us know what we're doing. We all drive crappy cars. Like, oh, okay, I'm fine. You know?
Yes.
There wasn't this intense comparisonitis and this intense feeling like you were always behind. This is a comment I get from clients constantly, where they feel like I'm behind, you know, I'm wasting time. What am I going to do? And so technology and how quick it is and how much we expect each other to, you know, be on all the time, it creates this atmosphere and this idea that, number one, you know, just like social media, your life has to be perfectly curated.
Yep.
And it also shows you that things need to happen gradually. Things need to happen fast, because, you know, the photos that we're scrolling through, we like to scroll through some photos and show the quick transformation, or we like to go through and just look at pretty things. And even though intellectually we understand, like, oh, that's my friend Susie, and I know she hates her life. Even though if you see Susie on the beach in Thailand, you're still going to feel jealous. Right? You're still going to feel this like, oh, what is Susie doing that I'm not doing? And what's wrong with me? So there's this constant comparisonitis, this constant feeling like you're not measuring up, you're not doing well enough, because what you see around you is, you know, so perfect. And, you know, it's also the rise of the reality celebrity people that are, you know, getting paid millions of dollars for really not, you know, not really having a talent that they've spent, you know, 10, 15 years harnessing.
Yeah.
And I think that part is really hard. And then on the work end, it's hard because my first job out of college, I worked 9:30 to 5:30. At 5:30, we turned off the lights, we locked the door and we left. Yeah. And my boss had no way of getting a hold of me unless she called me at home and I picked up. So that's so different than what my clients are going through, where they've got bosses texting them on the weekends. And so they're constantly like, do I work? Do I not work? And then with the pandemic, that just really shot everything out the window, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's unreal, because like people, like I get messages now saying, I saw you were online. So I just thought I would ask you. It's like, yeah, but it's like Sunday. Like, and I'm having Sunday. But it's like, yeah. I saw you online, so I thought I'd just ask you for this little bit of work. It's like, why? How did that become a thing? Do you know what I mean? It's
like, also like your boss, like I've got staff.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And you can, and like everyone's friends on Facebook, and you can kind of see what everyone's up to.
Yeah. We say that the line of privacy is
Which I'm kind of very grown up and draw the line, but
yeah, it's odd. But like, I think the one thing I remember sort of from my youth as growing up, a little like the late 90s, early 2000s, was that I didn't have a sense of being let down, actually, because like, I'd say to my friends, I'll meet you at the station at 7 p.m. and if you're not at the station, I'll go to the pub. And if I'm at the pub, then we'll go out. And if you're not there, then I'll be here. And it's like, if people didn't go, like, there wasn't this sense of immediate anxiety of like, where are you? Why are you not someone's on socials? Oh, they're not quite there yet, or they're there. And like, it's like that instilled now. It's like, and I'm probably guilty of it too. It's like, because my phone is in my hand. So where are you? But like, I've been waiting. It's like that transition of lack of patience. And again, as you said, Tez, expectation is like, it baffles me how we have literally been dictated by tech, like the accessibility of technology.
Yeah. Well, and it's also the other thing with texting. I say, hands down, texting has made it way too easy for us to flake on people.
Yeah.
Right. Because once upon a time, you were going to meet your friend at the movies, right? Or at the pub. If you did not show up, they would just be sitting there waiting for you.
Yeah.
Like, you were in deep trouble. So it forced you, like, oh God, okay. And so this is another thing that we're seeing right now with the younger generations, a lot of social anxiety, a lot of anxiety around interacting with other people. And a lot of that is that they're able to, it's technology, but it's really how technology has made it easy for people not to force themselves to like get over the hump, right? Because going and meeting someone new and all of that, dating, all of that, it's anxiety provoking. And so now we have all of these things that, right, are creating anxiety for us and at the same time allowing us to avoid anxious situations. And we need to, with anxiety, one of the tools to manage your anxiety, especially if you have social anxiety, is to not avoid.
Yeah.
You know, not to avoid it, to not sit there and analyze and say, should I call them? Should I not? Or should I ask them out? Or should I not? It's really about just going and doing it and knowing that you're, you know, when you get to the other side, you'll be okay. Like nothing bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
But that's this weird paradox that we're in right now. And so that's what's made young people so, you know, that created such anxiety for them.
We had a guy on most recently who was enabling sort of, he was on a paralysis to sort of go through porn addiction and the use of like technology and stuff with that, and how, and one of my points was about like youth being that, for something that, you know, I've been told through friends and everything else, is that there's a simple lack of having this, an access to something as taking away emotion a bit, right? Well, quite a lot, in fact. So like, I've had things of like people going out with people that are like a millennial or what have you, and something being about like, them not liking kissing, for example, because kissing isn't something you would typically see on porn videos or things like that, and therefore it's sort of become a void thing of closeness and interaction. And it's like, it's such a base thing. Kissing was like, when you didn't have phones or you wasn't able to slide into someone's DMs, you'd look at them across a club and you'd hope to get a kiss.
Yeah.
And it's like, how sad is it that culture has moved on so desperately that we've bypassed the romance and we're straight in for the kill? It's like, and that's like socially, I don't just mean about sex. I mean, just in every manner, like you bypass the nice in a way.
It just goes straight to the,
like, because you can court your friends, if you get my point. Like, the way you talk to people, the way you meet and engage people, I'm just baffled by, like, what happened, you know? And it is causing, like, much upset and clearly anxiety in people.
I think it's ease, isn't it? It's easy.
Yeah.
So everyone tends to go with the easy path because it's easiest.
So letting someone down when you're going there is easy enough to just go, yeah, I ain't coming. Sorry, like we're and the lack of guilt. Yeah,
because you don't have to face, like, actually speak to that person. That's what it is.
Yeah,
that's the big part. If you had to pick up the phone and let people down,
yeah,
that would be a whole other thing. Like people, I, you know, that would be that takes a lot of guts. And I see this too with my clients, and dating is a great example of this, of they're like, oh my God, this guy called me. I'm like, yeah, he should pick up the phone and call you.
Yeah.
You know, like, what do you think you're going to glean from text messages?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm constantly amazed by how much, you know, people really like all of their conversations with their partner and everything. I'm like, so wait, was this in person or over the phone? They're like, no, this was all text. Yeah, these people having these big fights and arguments and intense conversations all through text messages. And there is something about, you know, I'm going to sound incredibly old, but there is something about just the art of being able to have a conversation with a person and relate to them in person.
Yeah.
In a way that, yes, it is missing. And then, you know, the pandemic really just put a whole new wrench into that.
Yeah. I think so. One thing that I really love about life, such a grand statement, but is like in England, especially, and obviously in the States as well, actually. So I'll retract that in a minute. So, I mean, when you go out and you're able to sit at a bar, that one thing, one of my favorite things in the world, especially in like LA, I spent quite a lot of time there, is I can go into a bar and just sit and have an engagement with somebody that is deeper than just, you're right, how's it going? Like, I end up with friends, right? And it's something I love. I love the ability to look at the whites of someone's eyes and actually find out who they are. And here, much the same, like it's always been that way for me. And I've got some very good friends that were bartenders. They were people that are just in the pub, like people that live locally, and I got to know more about their life. The minute that stopped, I had no, because we, I don't know, like with post-pandemic, we were sat, we had to be, we weren't allowed at the bar, of course, but we were in these sort of areas with just the people we knew. And I just stopped going because like the enjoyment of social interaction is literally the unknown response, isn't it? That's the excitement.
I think the important thing about social interaction, which I think is what we lose, is that when you're interacting with someone and they seem to be enjoying what you're saying,
exactly.
It makes you feel good about
it. It's validation.
Yeah.
But and it's not just validation of getting ticks or a love heart come up on a picture you posted.
Yeah.
That actually is just a false representation of your life anyway. It's just so straight. And the amount of stress that must have provided so many young people as well. Yeah. Being new. I mean, I guess as well in the States, being, you know, new to drinking, around sort of your early 20s, just getting into that environment in post-college or whatever, in college, and then not being able to. It's like, I can't imagine that happening as a young person at that point. It's so beneficial to growing up, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and this has been a huge issue for young people that really isn't being talked about, because I have clients who their entire career has been remote. Now, mind you, it's only been like, you know, a year and a half of their career. But what people don't understand, I think older generations don't understand, is beyond the fact that you're missing all of these huge milestones of your lives, graduations, you know, parties, all this stuff that's so important when you're young and to be celebrated for accomplishing something, right?
Yeah.
Beyond those things, you've got a lot of young people who are going right into the working world remote. So they have no idea. They don't know how to talk to their boss about things. They don't know what to do, you know, and the meeting's over, click, it's done. And they're left alone in their rooms trying to figure out, like, well, how do I navigate this particular issue at work? And who do I ask? And do I try to figure it out on my own? And do I bother people? And so there's all of these things that right now we don't know what the future is, but there will be a ripple effect to it. And the other thing that you were saying that's really important, which is, you know, our brains don't fully form until we're 25. So what we tend to think of things in terms of like 18, 21, right? Of these milestones or these markers, college graduation, high school graduation. But really, you know, when you're in your early 20s, you are still, your brain is still developing, and which is why these years are so critical and so important, because you are shaping how you see yourself, how you see the world, you know, what you think about things. And so if you've grown up and your measure of success or worth or whatever it is are these likes that you get, you know, you've got to imagine and understand what that's like once you get out into the working world of like, how do you then how do you translate getting likes on a social media app into, well, how do I like my job? And how do I like my relationship? And how do I enjoy the people around me, right? This is a lot of what I see. And they have done studies. Blue Cross did a huge study on millennials back in 2018. And they talked about how incredibly depressed these generations are. They're depressed, they're anxious because of, just this tremendous amount of pressure to have these, incredibly fascinating, interesting lives. And the fact is, once you get out into the working world and once you get into life, it's pretty mundane, road. I've been married almost 18 years, and I say to my clients all the time, I don't know what you're rushing to get to. Like, I love my husband, but I've spent the last year and a half with him and locked in a house, and I love him. He's great. But I don't know why you're rushing to get married, because it's, it's long.
But is it, do you think then, because people are sold this like ideal on Instagram and stuff where they think that achieving like adulthood, if you will, is like owning a Tesla and having this huge, beautiful house with a swimming pool and like, and you know, and they're lovely things to achieve, obviously, and to have. But the fact is like that in itself is, I don't know, is it the search for the ideal that isn't there sometimes? I don't know.
I use this expression all the time, which is, you have to like your now. Which is, and I think that is when you're 16, 17 years old and you're dreaming about your future in your bedroom, your future can be whatever it wants to be. Like, it's so easy in your mind to say, okay, at 22, I'll do this. And at 25, I'll do this. And then I'll meet someone and marry them by 27. And then I'll do, right? You can easily do that. And what happens is that people do, they create these timelines in their heads about what they think they want for their future and what's going to make them happy. So then they, they create these things. And once they get into the working world and out and they realize like, oh, wait, I'm not just going to meet someone at 26. Like, that's not going to just happen. And there's that combination combined with how we view happiness. Cause we are very future focused. We are very much about, when I lose 20 pounds, I'll be happy. When I, when I make this X amount of money, we'll be happy. And I do it too. I've done it many times over the years and I know better. And I know, and I'll get there. I'll achieve that goal. And I'll find myself thinking like, okay, so what's the next goal? Yeah. Right. And what you have to do and remember is that, listen, if you want to have the swimming pool and the Tesla and all those things, that's fine. If you want to do the van life, if you want to be an artist, if you want to have whatever the life you want to have, it's fine. Go after that. But it's really about being happy and figuring out what's going to make me happy now and build upon that so that what you're creating for yourself will continue to make you happy. And I see this a lot where people will get into these jobs where, they're making tons of money and they're grinding it out. And they keep thinking like, well, once I achieve whatever this is, I'll be happy. And I'm kind of like, is it worth it? Is it worth, not having a life for 10, 15 years to get to the other side? And then where are you? Are you going to be happy there? Mm. And so that's why. And anyone will tell you this, even if you wanted to lose 20 pounds, the first thing people will, any healthy eating person will tell you is you've got to like yourself now. You've got to not hate who you are and think that the 20 pounds less of you is a better person. It's no, like, I love myself now and I love myself. But so I love myself enough to feed myself certain kinds of foods and carve time out of my day to exercise and do things that are good and healthy for me at my pace. Yeah. Versus this attitude of that inner drill sergeant of you're horrible, you're terrible, no one's going to love you, so therefore you need to change.
Yeah, it's the self-loathing and that kind of perception of yourself. So how do you go about addressing these things, Tess?
Well, the liking your now, that really, it starts with, I think it starts with just taking some time and reflecting, getting out of that headspace of, okay, I've got to work my way up and work and I've got to do this, I've got to do that, of really stopping and asking yourself, like, what do I enjoy? Like, am I enjoying my life now? Do I enjoy my work? A lot of times people get into these jobs where they think like, okay, well, I'll feel a lot better about it once I'm making this much, or I'm a boss, or I'm this. And what I tell people all the time about work is what you do every day. It's the tasks that you do. So, you know, being someone who works with people all day long, if I did not enjoy talking to people, this would be a really hard job. And so you've got, it's about what you get up and do, who you're interacting with, what are you selling? What are you talking about? Right. And so you have to ask yourself, like, do I want to do that? Do this thing, get really good at it. And then it's looking at your life and, you know, do you like where you live? Do you like the people that are around you? Do you like the people that you interact with? Like, really auditing in a way your life and asking yourselves, like, right now, what's working for me and what's not working for me? And it's funny, as strange as it sounds, that's something that people don't do enough. They don't really stop and ask themselves, like, do I like my friends? You know, do I like where I live? And really, this is what I do with my clients, is really trying to help them figure out what are the things that I need to focus on and start to change for myself so that I can move in a different direction? And what are the things that I need to keep and really appreciate and have gratitude, right? Because we get very hyper-focused on all the things in our lives that aren't working. You know, we get very hyper focused on, and we don't focus enough on the things that are working. So we need to be grateful. Yeah.
The things that we haven't got, we're more bothered about the things that we haven't got than thinking about being grateful for the things we have got. Mm. Like, I certainly went through that journey with myself where I just learned to try and be more appreciative of things rather than thinking, oh, I want.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I think something that shifted in my mind was, like, I used to be, like, I've worked in music for quite a while, Tess, and I've made music, done touring and all that stuff and had loads of things and craved, like, the new MacBook and whatever else. And then for some reason, what always happened to me, and it was like a weird thing, like, I'd buy something new and I'd drop it immediately and it'd scratch and break, and it used to crush me. But it was oddly like a lesson in, like, it's a tool to do something with, right? So, like, a laptop became a music audio station for me to make stuff. And then I started earning money out of this bit of kit that had a dent in it or whatever. And I think my brain sort of went to actually, like, appreciating experiences more than anything else. And I've said this before on the podcast as well, but, like, and it still is. Like, I'd rather, I'm quite frivolous with money, really. Like, I'm a bit like whatever. And it's an issue in itself, I've always found that I'd rather spend that money around a table with good people sharing an experience now anyway, than worrying about replacing something or getting something new or whatever, because that experience is not replaceable. It's a one-off.
Yeah, that's the being happy now thing.
That's a one-off, And I'm guilty. Don't get me wrong. Like, I don't do that all the time at all, but I realise I wake up in the morning and I can be like, that night was so good. Like, I did everything I needed to do. It was beautiful, and I will remember it till the day I die, you know. And that's something that I think comes with age and actually being shown. Like, I certainly was coached by some people in my life, not necessarily in my music job as such, but in like other admin jobs and like people I work with that were just, they had a much more, and I guess it was pre-technology, like pre-hyper social media usage and that, but they just had a much more balanced view and opinion. And I think when you meet people that do that for you, it does start to change and bend your perceptions. And I think it's a lovely thing when you're able to sort of set that aside, right?
Yeah, you're lucky if you can meet those people, though. That's why, for sure. Like, people like me have therapy, because I don't necessarily around those people.
But they're not in therapy, but just for different reasons, I guess, right? And that's, you know,
And so this is why, to circle back, right, to what we were talking about earlier about how easy it is to, you know, not show up to things, right? Like, this is exactly what you're talking about, is that, you know, how do you have these experiences if you're not showing up to your life, if you're not going to the thing, if you're not putting yourself out there and engaging, and how are you doing that? And so much of this, I always talk about this combination of exploration and reflection. You know, it's really about reflecting on, you know, what is it that I want? What's working? What's not working? What do I want? What don't I want? And then really going out and starting to explore and figure out, you know, because that's the other part of it too, is somewhere along the way, we got this idea in our head that we all have to know what the end result is in order to do things. This is something I get with my clients all the time where they'll say, I'll say to them like, well, why don't you just take like a pottery class? Why don't you just do this? You know, just do something simple. Like, you know, you do something that's got a beginning, a middle, and an end that will produce something. And they're like, well, what am I going to do with that? And I'm like, you're going to use your hands and make something. Yeah. But there's this idea now, because we live in this hashtag hustle culture, because there is all this pressure of got to get stuff done and you got to get stuff done, that people have a very hard time exploring and doing new things without it feeling like there has to be some sort of purpose to it. But what's happening is that we do need to explore. We do need to wander. We do need to go out and, you know, have random conversations and do random things and go to the random class and take these trips and do these things where we don't really know what we're going to get from it in order to figure out more about ourselves. Mm. And I think that that's just what I see with my clients is that, you know, technology in the world that we live in, it's kind of created this little box that everyone sort of put themselves in where it's like, no, I need to, you know, that's too scary. That's too difficult. I know I need to know what the ending is. You know, all of these things. And so much of figuring out who you are as a human being is this combination of going out and experiencing things because you don't really know what you're going to like or don't like until you do it. And then coming back inward and saying, well, did I like that? Yeah. What did I like about it? What was good? What was bad? You know, what felt right? What felt wrong? All of these things. And that's really the key to figuring out, you know, these larger life questions. But that, you know, it takes time. It's not very, you know, it's not very glamorous. And there is a lot of, you have to wander and you have to sit and trust that you'll figure out where you're going at some point.
Mm. Yeah. Experimentation. It's funny because like my daughter's 14 and their school already going, right. They're almost, they're really going on about exams. And I think, and I remember when I was younger, it was at like 14, you should have this idea about what you're going to do for the rest of your life. Yeah. And it's just huge. And actually, you just end up getting a crap job and then that leads you into something else. And then that leads you into something else. And you meet someone and they suggest trying that. And it's like, as you say, this is kind of assumption that we're meant to have it all worked out from this early point. And but I changed careers like recently and it's all just completely doable. But we're not told that, are we? We're told that we should know what we're doing.
No, it's crazy. Like the change. I think here as well, like we're not necessarily so our like our sort of system for like introducing you to work is a really interesting one, and it hasn't really changed much. And it starts at basically you get to a certain age and you can go and do work experience, and it's never in what you want to do. It's in what's available.
Yeah.
So like I was like, I'm going to be a musician. They were like, okay, cool. There's a graphic printers in the middle of London that we're going to send you to, and because you like art stuff, it's like, yeah, I'm good at art, but I don't want to do art. And then I end up getting taught Photoshop for 3 days. I was meant to be there for 2 weeks, and the guy signed me off to go home. And he was like, I'll just say you're here every day, and you can go if you want. I was like, yeah, this is boring. And that still happens. I know it does because a friend of mine's son is doing it. They did the exact same thing recently. You know, and it's like you're not geared towards that, really.
But you're like I think
you're meant to be making like life decisions for your grades. And it's
we should
like,
be told. The thing is, we're not really told that you're allowed to get it wrong.
No, we're not. It's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very true.
And it's like you can get it wrong, and the impact is normally pretty minimal.
Yeah.
So you can get it wrong, and you can change your mind at any point.
Yeah, throughout your entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yes. It's interesting.
But we're not really told that. And again, it's you know, I think you said, Tess, about showing up. Like, I kind of like that as a metaphor for life.
If
you don't show up, then you don't... If you don't... I was just saying it as though you have to engage with life. You have to try things and engage with life to get those experiences to know. And quite often, people don't, especially when they get to, like, my age. Like, I'm 45. People now are sort of thinking, well, like, this is it then.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, it's not. It doesn't have to be. Like, you can still go and have good experiences. You can try things out still.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, that whole thing of like, oh, well, I'll be 50 when this happens. It's like, well, you're going to be 50 regardless. You hope you are, right? So it doesn't, I think so much of this is about, right, our perceptions and how we see failure versus success, right? We, you know, we really, really, I think in many ways, we fear failure more than we want success. And I see so many people making choices and doing things as a means of keeping themselves safe from failure. And what they're doing is, in spite of maybe having some level of success along the way, or even learning something about themselves. Yeah. And there's some key concepts that come up all the time with my clients. And one of them is, you know, this, the fear of failure. There's a tremendous amount of fear around failure. And again, I think a lot of it's got to do with social media and how social media shows failure. You know, people tend to on social media either, you know, curate this perfect image, or they tell you a story of how they failed, but now they've triumphed. So they've kind of left out the middle part, or they kind of tell you this messy part of the middle, but it doesn't ever feel very genuine. It feels very much like, I'm going to tell you my messy middle because I need validation, or I need this, or I need that. Like, so we have a really hard time really trying to understand what does it look like. And what I say is, you know, there is no such thing as failure. There really isn't. You know, it's failure is subjective. You know, we, the three of us all go to a restaurant and I love it and you hate it. And, you know, one of you hates it and one of you thinks it's so-so. Like, who's right and who's wrong in that situation? And so that's the part that's really important. It's being able to see these things as, oh, I tried this new thing, not as, and I failed at it, but I just tried it. Like, the success, you know, we have to be able to see success as simply doing the act of it, not the outcome. Yeah. But because we've gotten so focused on the outcome, you know, that is what's stopping us from doing these things. And so that's the part that's really, really important is that you've got to let go of, you know, trying to control the outcome, trying to figure out how this is all going to turn out. And you've really got to focus on praising yourself for just doing it in the first place and seeing that success is just taking action, taking that first step, doing it. And obviously we all have times in our lives. I have many of them where there's like these moments of like, oh, you know, I said something and I should have done this. Like, we all have those moments in time, but really it's in exchange for, you can't control your life and not do things to simply never have a moment where you go, oh, you know, that didn't go too well, or oh, I shouldn't. That wasn't my best.
Yeah, it's kind of like enjoy the journey, and try and appreciate the journey more than because I certainly previously when I just basically hate everything. So I used to hate everything, and that's because whenever I got to a destination, and that could be like, when I say destination, that could be a point in life, I'd invariably say that wasn't worth the journey.
Right.
And that's because all the way through the journey, I resented the journey.
Yeah,
so that I wasn't going to like the outcome because I'd already decided I didn't like the journey anyway.
Yeah.
Right, I feel like something I've learned is very much is to try and appreciate the journey much more. Enjoy the doing rather than the final bit.
I think like the maintenance of like your mental health during that journey is something that has sort of wavered, I think, over many years for many people. I think it seems that there's a detrimental knock-on effect now from everything that happens. And I think although we're more equipped to identify it, which is a great thing, I think it still needs to be sort of noted. I think that like staying mentally well during that journey is as imperative as the journey.
Yeah, and that's an achievement.
And it is an achievement, that's right, yeah. Because you're always going to have, there's always going to be down points, and it is like, regardless, about seeing the best in those and how they affected your life.
Yeah. I always say, so I often say, have you managed if you manage your way through a difficult situation, then you did really well.
You know,
that was a win.
It was a win. Yeah, that's interesting. So how would you advise your clients and people you work with to sort of to stay mentally well?
Well, I think, you know, everything that you're saying, absolutely. And, you know, when you're talking about the journey, that goes back to what I was saying earlier, which is being able to look at your life and say, well, do I like this? Because the journey is, right? The journey is the work that you do every day. The journey is the person that you're living with. Like, the journey is where you're living, what, you know, all of those things. So, you know, the best in terms of just the day-to-day of staying mentally healthy, it's, I think the biggest part of it is, you know, there's this, we tend to throw away around this idea of like self-care. And what does that mean? And really what self-care is at its core, it's not bubble baths and like candles. It's really about getting up in the morning and saying like, what is it that I need for myself today? Like, what is it that I'm feeling? What is it that I'm needing? What am I thinking about? You know, what is it that I need for myself? You know, do I need connection? How do I, you know, how do I find that? Do I need movement? Okay. How do I find that? Like, do I need more time and space to just do nothing? Okay. How do I find that? That, those kinds of things, like that is real self-care and really having good mental health is about being very aware, number one, of your thoughts and feelings in real time, which is mindfulness. And, you know, and I really encourage all of my clients to find ways in their life to be mindful, whether it's taking up a meditation practice, but it doesn't have to be, you know, doing hours of meditation a day. It could be as simple as getting up in the morning and just not checking your emails, like mindfully being present in your own morning and having your own morning, reading something, having a conversation, like learning how to keep your mind and your on the present moment. And then constantly being able to have an understanding and awareness of what is it that I'm really needing right now? Like, why am I reacting this way? Why am I feeling this way? What's happening? And the more that you're able to do that in real time, that's everything. Awareness is everything. Yeah. The other part of it is so much of it is about our thoughts and what, how we choose to think about things, because we tend to think that we have no control over our thoughts, but actually our thoughts are the one thing that we have complete control over, right? You hear this all the time from prisoners of war, right? Where they talk about being stripped away of everything. But the one thing that people can't take away from you, no one can take away from you, is what you decide to think about, what you decide to focus on, what you, how you see things. And it's not about like, just like think about rainbows and sunshine and be happy, right? This sort of toxic positivity that people talk about. It's really about being able to stop yourself and say, wait a second, hold on, I'm catastrophizing here. Or wait, stop, you know, I'm not going to get fired. Or hold on a second, you know, this isn't, you know, this isn't a terrible thing. Or okay, what's really happening here? And being able to recognize our thoughts, reframe them, change them, and find a new way of thinking of and just thinking about things, thinking about ourselves. Because no matter what, you know, the thing is that our minds are our brains, because we are very much cave people. Our brains and bodies, all of it, we are designed to keep ourselves safe. And our brains were designed to see the dangers, to see like what could go wrong, because that's once upon a time kept us alive. The problem that we have now in our modern world is it's not so life and death, that we don't need to be at this high alert all the time because there's rustling in the bushes. But the problem is that we tend to keep going to those places. But what research has found is that if you start to think differently about things, see that gratitude is a great one, right? See the positive, enjoy the journey, be present, see the good. If you're able to do that, you're going to be able to build new neural pathways in your brain that will replace those negative thoughts. And again, this isn't overnight. You know, that's the other part of it too, is people, they come to me and they want these really quick fixes. And I'm like, oh no, no, this is a lifelong journey. Doesn't mean you're in therapy or coaching or anything for the rest of your life. That's not the point. The point really is that it is your lifelong goal is you know, managing the thoughts in your mind and learning how to have different kinds of dialogues in your head. And sometimes, listen, I have sticky notes all over my desk that remind me of things of like, you have nothing to prove. I'm reading them now. Like, I allow it to be easy. Like, just things that mean something to me that I have to remind myself of, even in my advanced age. And even with all this training, that it is incredibly hard to manage these minds that really are, you know, aren't designed for this modern world.
I do. Everything you said there, I had therapy a few years ago, and my therapist said a lot of what you said, and I completely agree. It was a revelation to me when I heard all that, heard the stuff about how your brain works. And it's right. I mean, people tend to think they see a therapist or a psychiatrist and someone else is going to solve the problem. And it's like, no, it's almost like, you know, if you're physically unwell or, you know, you've got diabetes, you change your diet, you exercise a bit and then you feel better long term. And that's the same with your thinking. You know, it is something you have to kind of work on all the time. And like, I still kind of fall back. But then I kind of catch myself going, I know why my brain's doing that. And that's not helpful. So I'll move on.
And that's incredibly powerful. And I see this with clients all the time where it's, you know, when I start working with them towards the time that we're wrapping up, which is, it's really powerful to hear them tell me like, oh, wait a second. And then like a couple hours later, I realized like,
yeah.
And I said to them, I said, what you want to get to is you want to get to a point of awareness where it takes you, you know, shorter and shorter and shorter amount of time to recognize like, wait a second, I'm going down a rabbit hole. I don't need to do this, you know, and I've got to figure out, you know, what it is, you know, I've got to redirect and think about this in a different way. And again, I really want to like say this because I think a lot of times people dismiss this as being this, you know, you just want me to think about happy things and cupcakes and stuff. And you know what, even thinking something neutral is better than negative, yeah. Right? So sometimes it's like, even if you can't go to this happy place with something, even if you can't find it there, thinking something neutral about it is more positive for you than always going down to the negative. But it is, it's truly a work in progress. I'll use this example. A friend of mine, Dr. Abby Metcalf, who's also she's a psychologist and therapist. She talks about this where, you know, what happens is we get in our car in the morning and it starts and we just sort of go, we just bebop along our day. Car starts. Great. Keep moving. Next day we get into our car and the car doesn't start. And suddenly it's like, Jesus, this is the worst. Life sucks. Blah, 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 blah. You know, my whole day is ruined. How am I going to pay for this? And the thing with this is that what's really important is, you know, it's the times where you get into but you don't celebrate the times that you get into your car and the car starts.
No.
Right. We have these moments that are really good and positive. Like things are, you know, that's, again, it's gratitude, but it's also like, things are working for me. Like life is moving forward. Something's happening. And that's the other part of it too, is it's not just replacing your thoughts all the time. It's also finding new ways to see the good in what you have and what is working versus only focusing on it when it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's kind of giving me pause to think because, I certainly find myself doing that, and I have to kind of, I'll notice myself going down a kind of negative route, and then I'll have to say, hold on, no, there are positives in there, and things, there are good things, and I'll try and appreciate the good things because there are, but yet you don't see them because they're all the time, all there, and you just tend to forget.
See, I suffer from that quite a bit. I feel like a snowball effect. So there will be an occasion, something will happen and it will be bad. And I've kind of had that quite a lot recently, like this week and last, where there's just been a succession of bad things. And like, I think the way the one thing I am very dependent on is having good people that actually care about me and actually give me time and a sense of community and wanting, as opposed to kind of trying to get that out of people that have too much going on themselves. Yeah. And that's always been a thing of mine. And I think I'll chase it. I'll chase like assistance at times, but actually someone will always come along and always say, look, just think about it this way. And I realize that you can solve this issue. And at times I suffer from sort of getting maybe overly excited, like angrily, and it's anger aimed at myself, to be brutally honest, because I didn't do something I should have, like a car, you know, like that light's been on the dashboard for like I don't know how long, and yet I've still ignored it to the point where I'm on a motorway and I've broken down, and I'm just angry at myself, and then something else will happen, and it just makes you physically feel, for lack of a better term, like shit. And you need somebody else occasionally to sort of just show you that everything is all right. And actually, as you said, when it does start, I will say, I was due to be at an appointment and I was late, and my car, I couldn't get an Uber to a station the other day. And it just so happened that I actually used my car to go to the station. I got to the station, and the car park, because it was half of the day, was half the price of the Uber would have been. So I parked it, and that was cool. Then I got in. I had 2 minutes to get my train, and then that was discounted because it was after time. And I was like, oh, great. And then I all got there, and I even got there 10 minutes early. And I swear to God, I just was like, yes, something good. and then following that's been a snowball of crap. But like, I mean, but at the same point though, now I've said it, I realised that happened the other day, and it's like, that was a good day.
You do have to kind of reflect. I like the idea of auditing. Sometimes you need to audit your day. There's loads of bad things, and then you think, hold on, a few things have fallen into place, or actually last week everything fell into place nicely. This is what I do. I kind of audit my, if I start feeling really low, I start doing that auditing.
Yeah.
And start thinking, hold on, am I, you know, are these feelings warranted?
Yeah.
And sometimes they're really not. Sometimes they are, but if they are, at least you know why.
Yeah. We've identified it.
I like that test. You said it earlier, the audit in your life. Sometimes, because I mean, we've all had friends who are actually, they're really, really toxic and not good to be around. You decide that you don't want to be friends with them anymore. And you might feel terrible about it, but actually it was a really good idea.
And I think that's the thing, right? As you know, when you are sort of looking and accepting all of the things that in your life that are actually really good, I don't think there's any harm. Like, I've done that. Like, I've removed myself from social situations because I knew they were going to hinder my sort of overall plan of what I wanted to be at a point in my life. I've done that for sure, because I was, you know, music can be a very, very toxic place. And like, if you can get drawn into sort of partying too much, and then that just being what life is for a long time, you don't actually get anything done. You're just procrastinating and making your body turn into a toxic mess. And I think we're all capable of doing that, aren't we? We're capable of, as long as we're shown how, and I suppose given the right influence.
I suppose it's, and again, I think some of that comes down to how you view yourself. If you view yourself as being worth more, then you might do something about it. But if you view yourself as a piece of shit, then you'll carry on.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it's hard to pull yourself out of that. I mean, that self-compassion, we are incredibly compassionate towards other people, and we're very, very hard on ourselves. And right, like that's that you were talking earlier about going to friends for advice and then being able to calm you down because they can see it so clearly. And that's that is one of the hardest parts about being human, is that, you know, even though you have all the tools, you are living inside of yourself. And it is really hard to be able to see things very clearly. And again, it does, you know, it's that Steve Jobs quote, right? Where we can only connect the dots looking backwards, never forwards.
Yeah.
And And that's, I think, one of the things that you see with people as they get older. And I do, I say this to my clients a lot of times. I said, listen, some of the stuff that I'm telling you, I know because of my training and the years of experience. And some of it I know just because I'm old, because I've just gone through it. And I think that that's part of, you know, one of the things about getting older is you are able to look back on your life and really see like, oh, thank God I didn't get that job. Or thank God that person never went out with me, because if I had gotten that job, then this would have happened and that would have happened. And then I would be there. You know, we look at the things that happen to us as such comments on our lives and our worthiness. And, you know, again, it comes back to this idea of failure versus being able to look at our lives as, you know, these are these roadblocks. There are these things that are coming up. It's, you know, you've got to trust and believe that there's a reason why this is happening. And this is why you're darting this way, you know, all of those pieces. And if you can relax into that, right? If you can relax into, you know, okay, I'm going to trust that things are going to, you know, work themselves out. Like it's not secreting things. It's not just sitting at home and wishing to have a Tesla. It's about like going out there, doing, exploring, putting yourself out there, but then trusting that things are going to, you know, work themselves out. And the things that don't work out for us might be the best things that ever happened to us.
Yeah.
But I think that's the part about being young that's really hard, is you just lack so much of that knowledge and information.
So true. It's so true.
I think that rings quite true with for me. Like that you learn from those things that actually don't work out so well. And that could be anything, because you make bad decisions and you know they're bad, but you still manage to sort of wisp your way through life making them. And occasionally those decisions will bite you on the ass. And then you won't do it again. Yeah. And you'll learn from it, and you'll actually make a better decision next time. Mm. And that could be anything, you know, it can be as serious or basic as it needs. But I think it's a thing that, I wish I knew, what is it? What's the quote from the song? I wish I knew what I was then when I was younger.
Rod Stewart's song.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? But like, you know. So we are coming to the close of our podcast.
Yeah, we are.
So can you tell our listeners where they can find out more about what you do, please?
Sure. You can go to my website, which is TessBrigham.com or TessBrigham Coaching.com. It'll take you to the same place. I have a complimentary workbook called The Quarter Life Crisis Handbook.
Yes.
So if you're someone who's trying to figure out like what's going on with my life, like what I was talking about earlier, like I'm not happy, what's wrong? This is a really good tool for you to start to ask yourself those questions. These are the same questions that I work on with my clients. And it'll also get you on my mailing list. I have a newsletter that goes out every Sunday called Sundays with Tess, where I give you, you know, some tools and tips on how to manage the week ahead. So those are the best ways. And I too am on Instagram as Tess Brigham, just like everybody else. But
yes.
I try to give lots of great information, as much, you know, free good information as I can for people who are just, you know, needing it.
That's fantastic.
Oh, thanks, Tess. I really enjoyed that. It kind of backed up a lot of things for me, actually. Things that I kind of like to be reminded of.
Yeah, yeah. It seems
interesting.
I like your mentality of working through and identifying all of these things that you know, we actually quite often forget when we grow up. So it's something to hold true and close to your heart, I think, all of this, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
No,
thank you, Tess. Thanks ever so much. That's great.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. This is the
mouth. This is the mouth. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.